Hi, my name is Ravina Travali, and today I'm going to talk to you about Polaris, which is a new way to accelerate page loads using fine-grained dependency tracking. And this is joint work with Amish Goyal and my advisor, Hari Balakrishnan from MIT, and James Mickens from Harvard. So the web has become much more complex in recent years. For example, sites today include far more dynamic content, such as JavaScript. But the one thing that has not changed is the fact that users demand fast page loads. And from a content provider's perspective, there's quite a bit of incentive to ensure that their pages load quickly. So numerous studies have shown that slow page loads can lead to both lost revenue as well as low ranking with search engines. And so because of this, the focus of this talk is on how to make pages load faster. But first, let's consider how a page is loaded today. So we'll load a very simple test page called x.com. So as soon as the client types in x.com into her browser, the browser will fire off a request for the top-level HTML for the page. The server will then respond with the corresponding HTML, and the browser will process this tag by tag. So the browser will first encounter a script tag for an external JavaScript file, and it'll fire off a request for first.js. At this point, the browser must halt HTML parsing, and the reason is that scripts can alter state that's shared by downstream tags. And so now, the browser must wait until first.js has been both fetched and evaluated before it can continue its parse. So once first.js has been evaluated, the browser will then hit another script tag for second.js, and it'll fire off a request for that. And again, just like with first.js, the browser must halt its parsing until second.js has been both fetched and evaluated. And finally, the browser will hit a link tag for an external CSS object, and it'll fetch and evaluate style.css. And so to load x.com today, it takes browsers 4 round-trip times between clients and servers. But can we do better than that? To answer this, we have to consider the page's dependency graph. And so we can model page loads as directed acyclic graphs, or dependency graphs, which capture all of the relationships between the objects on a page. These graphs are derived from a page's HTML, and they dictate the number of round trips that are required to load the page. And these graphs are particularly useful when thinking about performance. So the page load time is essentially the time that it takes to completely resolve the graph, which is effectively the time that it takes to both fetch and evaluate all of the objects on the page. So to make this a bit more concrete, let's make a dependency graph now for x.com. So to do this, we'll need source code for all of the page's objects. So here's some example source code. So the first object that we fetched is index.html. And so this is the top-level HTML for the page, and it defines the basic structure for the page, and also defines static references to objects that the browser should fetch. And so we can create a node for index.html in our graph. The next object is first.js, which is a simple JavaScript file that sets a global variable x to be 5. So first.js must be handled after index.html, because index.html references it. It tells the browser that it should go fetch first.js. And so to capture this dependency in the graph, we can add an edge from index.html to first.js. The next object is second.js, which is another JavaScript file, which counts the number of link tags on the page. And so just like first.js, second.js must be handled after index.html. Additionally, because second.js does not access the global state created by first.js, these two JavaScript files can be handled in parallel. And so to capture these relationships in the graph, we can add an edge from index.html to second.js. The last object is style.css, which is a simple CSS file. It sets all paragraphs on the page to be read. And so just like the two JavaScript files, style.css must be handled after index.html. But if we look closely, there's actually a finer grain dependency here. So because of its position in the HTML, when second.js is executed, it's expected that there are 0 link tags present on the page. But if we flip the order of style.css and second.js, then when second.js is evaluated, there will be 1 link tag on the page. And so this can then change the page's state. And so to capture this dependency in the graph, second.js must be evaluated before style.css, and so we add an edge from second.js to style.css. And so this graph is the true dependency graph for the page. It captures all of the relationships between the page's objects. But this graph is not exposed to browsers today during page loads. So what is exposed to browsers today? Well, browsers today are only aware about dependencies created by the lexical relationships between HTML tags. And so these are essentially the dependencies specified by the HTML language. And so for x.com, this is actually the type of graph that a browser would be aware of today. So as you can see, compared to the true dependency graph, this graph is actually missing some dependencies. Specifically, it's missing the dependency between second.js and style.css. And so this graph is actually a bit misleading because it implies that the two JavaScript files and the CSS object can all be handled in parallel, when based on the true dependency graph, we know that second.js must be evaluated before style.css. And so because browsers are aware that these graphs are missing dependencies, they're forced to use conservative assumptions when loading the page. And so when loading x.com, this is actually the type of graph that a browser would use. And so as you can see here, requests are essentially serialized in the order of HTML tags. And so some browsers do try to reduce the number of RTTs required to load pages by speculating that there are no hidden dependencies in these graphs. But as I'll describe later, even with such speculative execution, there still exists a significant number of serial round-trip times in page loads today. Also, recall that dependency graphs are particularly useful when thinking about performance. So we can actually put a lower bound on the number of round-trip times required to load a page by looking at the longest path from top to bottom in these graphs, which I'll call the critical path. And each node on this path represents a round-trip time because that node must be fetched and evaluated before its children can be handled. So we can label both of these graphs with RTTs. And as you can see, the true dependency graph implies a faster way to load pages compared to the conservative approach that browsers take today. So in this talk, I'll describe how we can first generate these true dependency graphs, and then how we can expose them to browsers to reduce page load times. To do this, I'll describe a system called Scout, which tracks the fine-grained dependencies between all of the objects on a page. And using Scout, we found that traditional dependency graphs based on the lexical relationships between HTML tags are missing a substantial number of edges. I'll then describe a system called Polaris, which is a dynamic client-side scheduler written completely in JavaScript. And Polaris uses the fine-grained dependency graphs created by Scout to remove the conservative assumptions that browsers make today and aggressively fetch objects in a way that reduces page load times. So the way a page loads with Polaris, a client would make a standard request for the top-level HTML for the page. But instead of only responding with that HTML, the server will also respond with the fine-grained dependency graph for the page. And the client will then use this to aggressively fetch the remaining objects. And across a variety of different pages and network configurations, we found that Polaris was able to significantly accelerate page loads compared to Firefox. So for example, on a 12 megabit per second link with 100 millisecond RTT, median page load times with Polaris were 34% lower than with Firefox. So I'll now describe how Scout tracks dependencies. So Scout tracks many different types of dependencies across a page's state. And we classify these dependencies into three main groups. So the first are write-read dependencies. So as an example here, first.js writes to a global variable x, and second.js reads x when assigning to y. And so if we flip the orders of these scripts, x would actually be undefined in second.js. The next type of dependency is a read-write dependency. And so here, first.js assigns x to be an array of length 3, second.js sets y to be the length of that array, so 3, and third.js adds an element to that array. And so here we have a read-write dependency between second.js and third.js, because if we flip the order, y would be assigned a value of 4 rather than 3. And the third type of dependency is a write-write dependency. And so in this example, we have two JavaScript files that use alert messages, which are essentially JavaScript's way of having a pop-up message on the screen. And because both of these scripts write to the screen, we want to preserve their order. Because if we flip the order, the pop-up messages would appear in a different order to the user, and that could then change the experience of loading the page. And so to track these reads and writes to a page's state, we use JavaScript proxy objects. And these are essentially wrappers around underlying objects that allow us to set custom handlers for both gets and sets to that object. And it's in these handlers where we log reads and writes to the objects. So as an example, consider the following source code. So the first thing we would do is rewrite the first line such that the object being assigned to x is wrapped in a proxy. And we would also specify handlers such that reads and writes to this object would be logged. So when this line executes, the underlying object will be wrapped in this proxy enclosure. Now, when the next line executes, which tries to read the underlying object, that read is going to hit the proxy. The proxy will log the read and then respond with the corresponding value. Similarly, when the next line executes, which tries to write to the underlying object, that write will hit the proxy, The proxy will log the write, and then it will update the underlying object. And we use proxies to handle many other types of dependencies, to track many other types of reads and writes to a page's state. So for example, we use proxies to track dependencies across global variables. We use recursive proxying, and we track reads and writes to the DOM. So using Scout on 200 pages, we found that prior dependency graphs are missing a substantial number of edges. Additionally, the structure of the graphs with Scout are quite different. So for example, most pages had very different critical paths, either in terms of length or location in the graph. So as an example, this is the traditional dependency graph for weather.com, and this is the graph that's generated by Scout, where red edges represent newly tracked dependencies. So as you can see, the Scout graph has far more edges and appears far more constrained than the traditional graph. But recall from earlier that now that we have all of the dependencies between the page's objects, we can actually expose these graphs to browsers to remove the conservative assumptions that they use today and accelerate page loads. And we do this with a system called Polaris. So here I'll describe the components of Polaris and how a page load works within Polaris. So the first step is for web servers to run Scout offline to generate fine-grained dependency graphs for all of the pages that they're going to serve. Then when a client request comes in, which is a standard unmodified request, the web servers will, instead of responding with just the HTML for the page, they'll respond with the Polaris scheduler stub. And so this scheduler stub is written completely in JavaScript. So client browsers are unmodified. They can treat these as a standard JavaScript response. And the scheduler stubs have three components. So the first is the fine-grained dependency graph for the page. The second is the original HTML for the page, because we ultimately want the page that's loaded with Polaris to be the same as it would have been without it. And the third is the Polaris JavaScript scheduler logic. And so these are functions written in JavaScript that use the fine-grained dependency graph as well as the original HTML to completely load the page. So it uses things like XHR requests to fetch objects and window.eval to evaluate responses. But Polaris's main goal is to reduce page load times. And it does this using intelligent request scheduling. Specifically, at any point in the page load, Polaris will always fetch an object on the dynamic critical path of the load, which is essentially the path in the graph with the most objects remaining. So as an example, considering the following dependency graph, where shaded objects represent objects that have already been loaded, and the empty nodes are nodes that represent unloaded objects. So looking at this graph, it's the middle path that's the static critical path, or the longest path from top to bottom. But at this point in the page load, it's actually the rightmost path that's the dynamic critical path, or the path with the most objects remaining. And so at this point in the page load, Polaris will prioritize a request on the dynamic critical path because it's blocking the most subsequent requests. And it's important to note that these situations arise quite often in practice. So network conditions and server processing time are quite variable, and so two different branches in the graph of equal length can take very different times to resolve. So to evaluate Polaris, we again considered 200 pages, and we loaded them with Polaris and Firefox over a variety of different network conditions. So here's a graph comparing the two. So the x-axis here is the round-trip time between clients and servers, and the y-axis represents the median percent improvement with Polaris over Firefox. So as you can see, across all of these pages and network conditions, Polaris was able to accelerate page loads compared to Firefox. So as an example, on a 12 megabit per second link with 100 millisecond RTT, median page load times with Polaris were 1.3 seconds lower than those with Firefox. So there are four things to take away from this graph. The first thing is that the gains with Polaris increase as the RTTs increase. The reason for this is that the penalty for not always prioritizing a request on the dynamic critical path of a page load is higher when the RTT is higher. The next thing to note is that gains with Polaris increase as link rates increase. The reason for this is that Polaris does not try to reduce the amount of bandwidth that's required to load a page. And so at low link rates, both Polaris and Firefox can become bandwidth bound. And latency savings that Polaris achieves are overshadowed by the limited bandwidth. And so Polaris and Firefox begin to perform more similarly. Next, the performance baseline here is a Firefox browser that does use speculative execution. And so recall from earlier that speculative execution is a way to reduce the amount of round trip times required to load a page. And so these results suggest that even with speculative execution enabled, Polaris is still able to significantly reduce page load times by reducing the number of serial RTTs required to load a page. Finally, the large error bars. And so these imply that Performance with Polaris is not only dependent on network conditions, but also on the structure of a page's dependency graph. And so to understand this, let's consider three sites in our corpus. Apple and weather represent the two extremes in terms of site complexity, and ESPN is the median. So as you can see, performance with these three sites is quite different. And so to understand why, let's consider the two extreme sites by looking at their dependency graphs. So for Apple.com, performance with Firefox and Polaris is quite similar. And looking at the graph, the reason is that all requests have the same priority because the graph is flat. And so intelligent request scheduling does not have a significant impact on page load times. With weather.com, however, we can see that there are many short and long chains in the graph. And so intelligent scheduling really does have a significant impact on page load times, and this is how Polaris is able to accelerate page loads over Firefox. So in conclusion, I've described how browsers today are constrained by uncertainty as to how objects on a page interact. And this forces them to use conservative assumptions while loading pages, and then this leads to higher page load times. And none of the prior work on dependency tracking has actually tracked these missing dependencies between objects. And so to overcome this, we've designed a system called Scout that's able to track the fine-grained dependencies between all of a page's objects. And using Scout, we found that prior dependency graphs are actually missing a substantial number of edges. Then I described a system called Polaris, which is a dynamic client-side scheduler written in JavaScript. And Polaris uses the fine-grained dependency graphs generated by Scout to aggressively fetch content to reduce page load times. More information on Polaris and Scout can be found at the website, and I encourage you to email us with questions at polarisweb@mit.edu, and I'd be happy to take your questions now.
Since nobody got up, this paper got a lot of excitement at Google. There's a bunch of people talking about it, and so I have to ask this question on behalf of my colleagues. So, the biggest problem here is you have to pre-build this dependency graph for the page, but it can be very challenging in practice to know what that dependency graph is going to be because so many variables are going to affect it, right? What country you're coming from, what your screen size is, exactly what your user agent is. So how do you propose to address that challenge? I mean, I guess you have a backup slide or something, so
I played right into your... Yeah, so I mean, that's the biggest challenge that we were worried about when designing this.
Right.
So you're right. So servers can, for example, serve a totally different page based on, whether somebody's using Chrome or Firefox or something like this, so user agent string. Even if the content is actually quite dynamic, if the structure of the page remains the same, then the Scout graph should still be able to be used within Polaris, because it essentially, the URLs can be slightly modified as they could be from run to run, like query strings and so on. But you're right. So if the structure of the page is really changing from run to run significantly, especially if it's from third party ads and so on, you could try to use Scout online and try to dynamically generate this graph. But of course, then you're adding this synchronous overhead to the page load because you have to make the graph. And so perhaps, for those types of pages where the structure is actually changing, Scout may not be the best way to actually speed up the page load.
Yeah, but I bet it'll work in practice. It'd be cool to try it on large body of work.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Manu Bansal from Stanford. I have a very basic question, actually. I don't understand this much, but it seems like object load is the bottleneck that you're trying to solve, but the dependency examples you described seem to relate to object execution. So, I mean, why couldn't you just go ahead and load the objects anyway as far as the HTML tells you?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So in the example that I had, the objects that were actually fetched were exactly statically defined in the HTML. But in a more complicated example, there's a lot of times when the URLs are dynamically generated. Oh, sorry. I could have to execute JavaScript to generate a random number that's part of the URL that I have to fetch. But so you couldn't fetch it without evaluating its parent. So meaning at the beginning of the page load, you would not know all the URLs to fetch without continuing to do the graph.
But in that case, how would you know it either? I mean, it's an execution.
No, so we're trying to say that in the cases where that happens, then there's these deep chains of execution, and you have to continually execute before you know how to proceed to get the actual URL, we would prioritize the deeper chains first.